right side. Light this bitch up.
What is up, everybody? My name is James DeFiore, and this is Casual Friday. It is a long week for me. This is the end of my trip to Ottawa. I gotta tell you something, Ottawa. Every fucking street, with the exception of the Byward Market, wherever that place is called, every single street looks exactly like Bay Street between Wellesley and Dundas. It is the most boring fucking city I've ever seen in my life. Like, the Parliament buildings are dope because it's like classic and shit. And then, like, you know, the market, which is basically right there, it's pretty good, I guess. And then everything else is just like office buildings that are about 6 to 12 stories high, gray windows. Sometimes you can see in, sometimes you can't. Printing shops in the bottom, coffee shop. It is like Kinko's. It's just Bay Street. If anyone lives in Toronto and you know what Bay Street looks like between like Wellesley and Dundas, that's all Ottawa is. So you don't even have to go there. You're welcome. And I only interviewed one person this week, and her name was Christine Anderson. She is the European Member of Parliament from Germany that everybody loves because they don't think she's a Nazi. I don't think she's really a Nazi either, but I also don't agree with basically 90% of what she says, but she's delightful. And I have a thing for older women with short hair, so what can I do? And then next week I'm interviewing Max Bernier. So please, I literally have a grand total of 78 hate emails that I've gotten since I started this podcast. And almost all of them have to do with Max Bernier, Christine Anderson, and I'm going to get rid of this. Christine Anderson, Max Bernier, and who's the other one? The one that that had the protest in Toronto outside the library. And she was banned from Twitter. I forget her name. It doesn't matter. But I had people not come on the show for that one. And anyways, I'm going to wallpaper my bathroom with it. That's all I wanted to say. I'm going to enlarge it. I'm going to like wallpaper my bathroom with hate mail so that when people sit down, if they didn't need to take a shit before they sat down, they will once they read the people who are stupid, who call me a person who platforms people, which is not even a word. It really isn't, guys. It's just interviews. That's all that's happening. And Max Bernier is going to be this will be the funnest Maxime Bernier interview yet, because all I'm going to do the entire time, and we know how much fun this is talk about everyone's favorite subject, abortion. Because Max Bernier has decided that, and I actually think it's probably not a stupid move strategically. I'm not saying I agree with him. I'm not saying I don't either, because what he wants to do, and people don't know this, Canada, when it comes to abortion, and this show is not going to be about abortion, don't worry, but Canada, when it comes to abortion, we actually don't have any laws. We're like the reason why, abortion is accessible is not because it's a charter right, because it isn't. It's not a human right in this country. It totally isn't. There is literally no law on the books. The same thing happened with weed one time when weed was in this weird gray area for a while where it wasn't on the books. There was like a possession charge of under a quarter or something that just wasn't on the book. So it wasn't legal, but because they kind of took it off and turned a blind eye. I'm really sorry. I should have researched this, but I'm just thinking of it now. I'll do it when someone else is talking during the show. And it was in a gray area. So if you got caught with weed, the most they could do, they couldn't even ticket you. They could just like take it away from you. And there was like a 3-month thing where legislation just expired and then, or was, I don't know, like a judge overruled it or whatever the law term is. I really miss Karima in moments like this. But then, 3 months later, legislation came back. So then it came back. But abortion in Canada doesn't really have a law. It doesn't have a law at all. So Max, and so other countries, and these are Western countries, all of them allies, we're the only one that doesn't have some sort of guidance. I don't want to use the word regulation because then I'll get hate mail. But some sort of guidance regarding late-term abortion. And I can already hear people being like, well, that hardly ever happens. Well, if it hardly ever happens, then no one should really care about the legislation. But just think about the kids that maybe could be born at 8.5 months old. You know, even if there's one, isn't that one too many? It's 8.5 months old. I am under the belief, and I don't care if this makes me sound like this or that. If the kid can survive outside the womb, if we designate like given science advances, and it's like, okay, the kid can survive outside the womb at 6.5 months. I'm not saying you have to force people to do anything, but maybe we should strongly suggest that the person who's delivering the baby can maybe give it up for adoption via C-section or something rather than, you know, do that. Anyways, and to piss off even more people, that's all the abortion talk we're going to do the entire show. So I don't want to hear anything from anybody. And with me today is a special guest, Douglas's husband or boyfriend. I don't know if they're married, but Douglas's sweetie, as he calls him, threw a surprise party for Douglas, and Douglas is not here today, and I hope he's having a really good time. I think that it was really nice of Alex to notify us that he wouldn't be here. That was really thoughtful. You didn't have to do that at all, because I'm sure you have your hands full, but thank you very much for that. But with me instead, as my co-host tonight, is a person that I've had on the show before. He's my ex-brother-in-law. He's also an accomplished, I would say, what would I call him, artist, and advertising guy, because he does commercial. I'll let him explain, or maybe not. It doesn't matter. He's a fucking, as far as I'm concerned, he's a guru in the advertising world. He was a graphic designer, and he started up, and he just worked his way up to creative director and all these really amazing companies. He's made really cool commercials that all of you have seen. And his name is Paul Riss. Paul, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm sorry I fucked up your intro. I don't know what to call you, because what I first called you was that guy that was doing my sister. And then now, and it's evolved so much since then.
It really has.
Yeah, it totally has. Yeah. But what do you like? Your career has been an interesting progression like that, though, right? Like, you were an artist who found himself in the ad world, which is weird. I know that your mind is like more of an artist than a corporate person. And you know how to play the game. But naturally, you're more of an artist, no?
Yeah. I mean, I just think of myself as a creative thinker. So, you know, I've done a lot of different things. But my career is basically, I started off as a graphic designer. And then I met a guy by the name of Matt. And he said, you think about things in a really strange way. I feel like you'd be good at advertising. So I switched from graphic design to advertising. And I thought of some really weird things that sold products for my clients. I'm actually like researching some of the least trusted people, and I'm way down at the bottom. I don't know if being a graphic designer gets me like some points, but like advertising practitioner is, I think, two above.
That's a thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like. National Post.
What egotistical psychopath came up with that fucking term?
Yeah.
What is that, a producer? Is that just producer?
If you make ads, if you do advertising, if you sell people the things that they might not need, then you're down in the lower 30% of trustworthy.
That's so many things. You could be a consultant if you do that. You could be a lawyer.
Yeah.
Right?
Anyone who apparently touches advertising, that means all these wonderful people that I've worked with throughout my career, like super talented directors and people that are incredible music producers or voice talent directors, all that. That means that they're all down there with me.
Ever not get along with anyone?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Okay, I want to hear one of those stories. I'm not interested in how you blew sunshine up someone's ass, but like how you don't have to, don't name anyone. Obviously, don't name the company if you don't want to, unless they're dead, and then you could probably do it. But like,
I assume them to still be alive. I don't know. You know, there was always a back and forth kind of thing with account people and creative people, right? Like, it's a classic. I'm on the business side of things. Well, I'm on the creative side of things. And the creative people always kind of got. I would just say straight up, when I was coming up in the business, we were treated better because we were the people that had the ideas that sold the products and all of that. And they were sort of like the person who ran the business, which, you know, as I've matured, I realize and understand that they were a big part of everything we did, of course, too. But you know, when you're young,
look
you're
at you talking, politicking. Look at you.
Yeah, you know what it is. Well, one is my business partner now. I started an agency with him, so I kind of have to believe it.
I'm gonna play something that I haven't even watched yet, but it was the latest thing that you've done. Intro it, because I don't have no idea what I'm about to play. We have high standards here at Blackballed, where we'll just play anything that a guest tells us to play. So.
Well, it's safe. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it relates to an interview you did that I watched and thought was really excellent with Julie Black. So it has nothing to do with her, but when you interviewed her before, she was working with BGC Canada, which used to be called Boys and Girls Club, but they obviously changed name because, you know, of the non-binary nature of everything these days, it just wasn't as inclusive. So they changed the name.
I have no comment. Go ahead.
Yeah, I get it. So
because I'm not allowed
I'm not either. It's a commercial for that organization, and the fact that they help a lot of kids with a lot of really, really tough situations. And it's a great company.
Like family situations or school bullying, like, or all of the above, or?
Well, all of the above, like all the way up to gang stuff. And, you know, like a lot of young kids in urban centers are like almost destined to be in a gang. And these guys really change lives. It's one of those ones where it's not funny. What you're about to watch is not funny. It's just a scenario. And I think you said bullying. This one happens to be a couple of kids bullying an indigenous young girl.
Okay, and, yeah, set it up, yeah.
Yeah, and so what we're trying
and your role too. Like so people understand that what you do, you know, like
I'm the creative director. I hired a writer and an art director to think of ideas, and I helped guide them to this point. And then I went on, I hired a director, and I hired audio people and a producer and all that stuff. And we made this commercial. So like, I'm sort of like I'm the creative director at the agency that made the work for the client. So that's my role.
Okay.
Somebody else wrote it. Somebody else art directed it, but I hire those people and I guide them and work on the strategy and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So, for those of you on Spotify, Apple, and other podcasts where you're just listening, head on over to my YouTube page so you can watch it. So here, yes. Does it have a title?
Yeah, this one's called Bullying, actually.
You chuckled there because I didn't send them to whatever the organization is. Should I?
I chuckled because, you actually, when you said, what do they help kids with? Like, bullying was one of the things. And I was like, oh, that's funny. I sent you a bullying spot.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been both the bully and the bullied in my life. So we'll see how it goes. Yeah. No, I'm, so this is Paul. What's the name of it? Sorry.
BGC Canada is the name of the organization that helps the young kids. And
okay,
the spot is just, I just called it Bully.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go. Wow. That's so, actually pretty. Yeah. I like the way that it went off of them and just onto the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a reason behind that. Like if you see some of the print advertising in the campaign, it's a portrait of a kid and then it has their story written over top of them. But most of it is redacted because we can't really share those. The kinds of things that happen to these kids, you can't, like, you can't put it on TV. You know, you don't want it to be exploitative. And also, like, some of the things that I've heard through working with the organization is things that I'm not certain I'd be able to get through as a 53-year-old man mentally. I'm not sure I'd be able to handle it. And these are like 8 to 14-year-old kids that are dealing with this stuff. And so our whole thing was to not show it. And part of that, like from a creative perspective, I don't expect viewers to think of it the way I'm about to explain it, but from a creative perspective, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to do the thing that a great scary movie does. It doesn't show you the monster, and the monster will be whatever's in your head. So you had an idea of what happened there. Well, some of the viewers, John or Elaine or Betty Ann, like if they watched it, a different thing would have happened off camera for them. So it would be as awful as the person that's viewing it is able to handle. So therefore, it doesn't insult anybody, but doesn't come off too light or too dark, or so that was the idea behind not showing the thing that happened.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It creates a subjectivity, but really the root of the idea is that whatever's in your head is probably not even bad enough sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically it. Like whatever you can think of, they've been through worse.
Yeah, something how did you handle that? Like when you were, is it the process of working on something like this could be a couple months or something sometimes. So how was did it impact you?
Yeah, that working with that client always impacts me because I meet real kids who are dealing with these things a lot of the time, and I've done a spot before that actually had club kids in it, and I learned some of their stories. And yeah, man, you can't help but be kind of inspired by the kids. I know it just sounds so cliche what I'm saying right now, but
I don't think so.
when you're in the moment and you're hearing these stories, and I think to protect the privacy of the one person, I don't think I should even say what she told me happened to her, and that's how she channeled her. That's like as a quote unquote actor in the spot, that's how she channeled her facial expression, was thinking about what happened to her. And when she told me so matter of factly what happened to her, like it was just like, well, this like is in the same way that I
Yeah.
would say, like, oh, I read this great book last week. It
Yeah,
was
it's
so not a
yeah.
thing, but it was a massive thing that I'm not sure I'd be able to recover from.
Yeah, I know some people like that. It's actually to me a sign of strength often because I think and I know people really close to me that have had stuff happen to them where they're a kid, and they say it matter of factly too. And I remember having conversations with them where they're like, well, it's not something that I allow to overpower me anymore. And so when I say it, I don't want to be dramatic because that's not how I feel.
Yeah, exactly. She just was out with it, right? It's like I said, I just and all I said was, you did so good. Like these people are they're these kids are not actors, right? But after the fact, she was so good. Her expression was perfect. And I was like, that's you're so good. You did such a great job. 'Cause she was nervous. They're always nervous, right? About being in front of a camera and all that stuff. But then to hear
That
them
kind of
say,
works to the benefit in a way too, right? Because like in that context especially, right?
Definitely. But to hear that kid who's dealt with such trauma so gracefully,
Yeah.
to hear her say, I had a great time doing it. This was fun. It was like that made me feel good,
Yeah. Yeah, because that would be like therapeutic almost for both of you.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've gained a greater I gained a greater respect for other people's problems and situations and things by working with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me of there was a time, and some people that know me or have been listening for a while might remember this, but I was I for like 4 months, maybe 15 to 20 hours a week, I dedicated myself to trying to research so I could come up with like a short video and like a 6-part series like of articles talking about the history of sentencing of child sex crimes and why it's so small, because there actually are really interesting caveats that no one knows about why these sentences are so tight, and none of them are good reasons, by the way. It's just that the crime isn't like seen as heinous as raping or killing an adult, right? Like, it's just for some reason. I think it should be on par with murder, I personally think, because it has this, it kills people's lives in a more mental, psychological sense, right? Like, I can relate to that, in some ways. So the but the process itself was so awful that I had to abandon it. I really did, because I would read cases where the judge is like, despite the defendant's repeated raping both vaginally and anally of his daughter over a period of 6 years, da, 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 and you're like reading this and you're like, holy fuck. And then in the decision, they're like, I see no reason that the defendant should be not be incarcerated for the maximum 6.5 years. Whatever the fuck, right? It was always something that was ridiculously, and you're just sitting there, and I couldn't do it. I mean, I could have buckled down and done it, but I was like, all like, I dreamt about shit. Like, it wasn't, it wasn't healthy to do it the way I did it. Now I know the gruesome details, but yeah, it's a tough subject. Like, when you're involved in working on something like that, it's, it's a difficult process.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's a far cry from writing something comedy. Like today I was writing comedy, so.
Yeah, let's play one of your comedies so we can shift gears a little bit. This is a Cialis commercial that you did. It's great, and I think most of you have probably seen this. So this is Paul Riss, creative director for this ad for Cialis.
Cialis. Ask your doctor.
That is such a good ad. Like,
They're
it
so
is.
funny. Nothing happens.
It's,
That's what
I
I
know,
like. Literally nothing happens.
but you get it. You just
Yeah,
get
right.
it. It's and it was so for some reason, because I'm a nerd, I want to know this the movie itself. Was that because one of the shots of the thing blowing up looked like your agency building?
It did. Yeah, you're right. Totally did. No, like all of that stuff was stock footage. I just bought that stuff.
Okay.
It's too
Well, that was
expensive to
dope.
do something like that back then.
How fun is it to do ads like that? Because like the creative is so different from when you like you did the sumo car wash thing for what was it, Hyundai or Toyota?
Subaru. Yeah.
Subaru. And that was like visually hilarious and harkened back to the idea of scantily clad women all over American sports cars, and it was just like the Japanese or whatever version of that. And it was, but it was like it was super entertaining. But this is like completely abstract.
Yeah, well, the thing about pharmaceuticals is you can't say what it does. You can't say what it is except for showing the logo and a voiceover at the end. Like you can't say anything, nothing,
Yeah.
and not say anything. And that to me is a fun challenge. Like there was a great Viagra commercial that some friends of mine made, whereby it was like they were having like, there was like a water cooler version and there was on a golf course version. And it was just like a couple of people talking. So the woman would say, "So what'd you get up to last night?" And the person like literally just said what they did, but they bleeped out like the longest bleep you've ever heard in a commercial, the almost
Yes.
20 second bleep. And at the end of it, there's just like that awkward silence of, like what was just said that we never heard. But again, it's one of those things where,
You create the subjectivity yourself,
oh
right?
yeah,
Like,
I had a, th they did a different thing in my brain than they did in somebody
oh
else's
yeah.
brain, right? Like there's no
For me, it would have been like the aristocrats joke.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I actually forgot about that. Hey, since it's casual for, oh, okay. He walked
What is
away.
that, Rachel?
No, that's my children. It's my
Oh,
twins. One of them's wearing a Mayhem shirt, and the other one's wearing an Arctic Monkeys shirt.
I think that's all the evidence we need that you've done a good job parenting.
Yeah, not bad.
Really.
Not everybody's son wears a Mayhem t-shirt.
Just to let everyone know and to make it a little awkward for everybody, Paul has like one of my favorite people of ever is your wife. Your wife Rachel is top three creative, top three funny, and in my opinion, top three hot, because she's like tall and she was a roller derby girl and she's got big boobs and you just want to snuggle her, right? Like,
yeah, she's got lots going for her. That's for sure.
She'd be one of those girls where it's like, James, if Rachel were to kill you by strangling you with her thighs with roller blades on, would you be okay with that? I'd be like, yeah, sign me up for that shit. Like, you know, it's so much better than cancer.
Good way out.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. But yeah.
Oh, my daughter's out there. She can hear what you're saying.
Oh, that's, I'm so
like,
sorry.
She's like, ooh. No, that's fine.
I don't want to know. Don't tell them. Tell them they're 23. Her. She's 23.
Yeah.
The daughter's 23. I swear to God. Oh, fuck.
Definitely old enough to find that funny.
I'm realizing I'm sunburnt. I think.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, because I was walking around a lot in Ottawa.
I've been inside so much because I broke my collarbone. So I'm not.
Yeah, you look like you look like you were clothed to match your curtains and your wall hanging.
Yes, and I have a spare arm.
Yeah, you broke your collarbone. How did you break it?
Minor motorcycle accident.
Well, you keep on saying the minor thing. Is that because your kids are there?
No, because I like it's weird because as soon as you tell everybody, well, I had an issue with my so I got caught.
Just say it. I don't care if it's boring.
It's
got to be less boring than this.
No, yeah, I got caught in the rain and I was heading home, but I was like being super careful. And I was going only like probably 25 or 30 kilometers an hour on Main Street in Hamilton. But like big roads like that, that get heavy use, they're not flat, right? Like they're like this from the grooves, from the weights of the cars from years and years driving on the road.
Like little ones, little dips.
Yeah, right? Just little, like you don't see it when you look at it, but it's there.
Like the Trent Street jump in Whitby. Do you remember that?
I do, yes. Yeah. Done that a lot. Mm-hmm. So as I was moving into the left turn lane, because there was a parked car. Usually I ride in that lane anyways when I'm approaching my house. This is only a block away from my house, so I thought I'm in the rain, and
that's where most people die, Paul, by the way.
Yeah, I know. And there's the thing, the bumps in the road, and then I guess as I changed lanes I hit a patch of oil, and on fresh rain the oil just like the water just sits there and it's like black ice, right? So my bike literally went like out from underneath me. So luckily it didn't fall on me. It didn't break a leg.
Did you slide?
Oh yeah. Well, I flew first and then I hit the ground on this shoulder. And then
minor accident, everybody. So you flew off the bike and started pummeling down the street. Go on.
Yeah. So I hit my right shoulder on that's what I landed on first. And then my head bashed off the road like a basketball. It was totally insane.
Minor accident. Totally insane.
Yeah, that part was totally insane. But the amazing thing is fucking helmets, man. They're so, like, I wear a proper full face mask helmet. And I'm like, they scanned my brain and made sure I didn't have any issues from the, because I said, well, yeah, I sure felt my head bounce off the road. But it was, but
no,
it was
concussion
actually,
or anything.
No, nothing. Not even a headache. I bought a very expensive.
Not a headache.
No.
James, I should point out at this point that I was going 4 kilometers an hour.
No, I was going only like 25 or 30 kilometers an hour. So
still, how long did you slide? How long do you think, like, you fell off the bike and then how long was the trip before you hit something that you stopped?
Yeah.
Where you stopped?
Yeah, I just came to a stop. I would say that I don't know, like 10, 15 feet or something like that. I remember sliding on the road. I remember going, this, like, it was a weird sensation just scooting down the road, but laying on your shoulder.
Yeah.
It was weird. When I say minor, I say because all I did was break my collarbone. It wasn't bad. But it didn't involve another car or, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't like some kind of a ding dong. Go ahead.
That might be my kids. Just give me one second.
That'd be amazing. Hold on.
Paul, talk to the audience for some reason.
I'm going to talk to Linda because she thinks she's talking about my creepy doll back here. Yeah, Linda, I bought that doll when I was doing a TV commercial, actually, I was shooting it in Buenos Aires, and I just went to this really cool little place. Oh, James is back. Anyways, I was just telling the story of my creepy doll.
I was just, that was going to be my next question. Oh my God, Linda, Linda, thank Pedro. You. You're my spirit animal tonight, Linda, because that's exactly what I was going to ask when I came back. Sorry, sorry about that. And you know what else? I didn't stir the sauce.
Oh no! So you burnt on the bottom?
I don't know. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, you got to check that because that's a problem, man. Well, you can tell I'm not a host, really, because what am I going to talk about? This little doll here, I brought him back from Buenos Aires, but I think on purpose, because this was this would have been post 9/11, but anyways, so I put the doll, but I didn't like carry him on. I folded him in half and put him in my carry-on luggage, so when they ran it through the scanner, they'd see what they thought was maybe a baby in there. Wow. And there was a little surprised look on the face of the man that's running the machine, and it was like one of those, it was like almost written for a comedy show, because like the thing went back and then forth. They were just,
it all looks British to me.
He does look British.
Can you pick it up? Can you like put it on your lap or anything? So we can get the full effect of the wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually really nice. Can you control the mouth?
I can, except I'm.
I don't know. You got a broken arm.
I'm at a deficit here with one arm, right?
So, yeah.
But there's a string on his back.
I think I just saw it on your lap, on your like sternum.
Yeah. You pull the string, and you know his.
Oh, there you go. Wow, he only opens it a little bit, so he's all on like fentanyl or something.
Yeah, well, also, there you go. I'm like so terrified.
Now cocaine. Yep.
Yeah, I'm so terrified to break the string and it doesn't work anymore.
Is it like a classic doll or was it made recently?
No, this thing is so old.
Really?
I bought it in a junk shop in Buenos Aires when I was shooting a commercial. Hence putting in my carry-on luggage because I had to bring him home and I didn't want him to get wrecked. Bottom.
You should, like, did they check babies? Like, if you had a baby in like a basket or some shit, whatever those things are called, that women carry, where, you know, the carry on, crib or whatever the fuck, right? Like, do they check to make sure it's a baby? Because that would be hilarious. Because it's not breaking any laws. You're just putting a doll inside a little baby carrier.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that they'd want the doll to go through the thing though, whereas they wouldn't probably want a baby to go through the.
My doll identifies as my child.
Wanted to bring that back, eh? I'm not. I told you, I'm not touching that non-binary stuff.
I'm not. I don't know. What are you talking about? I have no idea what that means. Non-binary. Yeah. Identify as Wood from Buenos Aires.
Yeah. This he's a good guy.
No. What's his name?
Pedro.
Oh.
Pretty racist, that's probably.
Okay, you're a little too hard on yourself, Paul. That's okay. That whole thing where we're all way too careful is actually kind of like Twitter. It's not really real life because it's.
No.
I'm not saying that we should be mocking people, but if but if you named your doll Pedro because you got it from Buenos Aires
country, yeah.
Like if you listen, if you named it John Smith, you would have been called a colonialist. So don't worry about it. You're fine. That world doesn't exist. That world doesn't exist because real morals and ethics are based on intent and understanding. It's not based on naming a doll Pedro, which is culturally correct for where you were. You'd be appropriating the culture probably if you named him something else, you know, like
Jedediah. What I should do is I should name him Pedro, but give him a German last name because it was Buenos Aires, right? So Argentina is. A lot of Germans went to Argentina. Bad.
That's where Hitler went.
Bad, bad Germans went to Argentina.
There's that whole conspiracy about Hitler. like, really. And it's kind of a, like, listen, I don't know what's real and what isn't. You know, like the world is a very complex place and everyone lies, right? So I have no idea what the fuck is real. But, like, the conspiracy of Hitler being, like actually escaping Germany, going to Argentina, is kind of plausible to me because, from what I recall, they said that Hitler shot himself in the head twice somehow. Didn't he have two bullet holes in his head?
Yeah, maybe the first one didn't do the trick.
Yeah, maybe. And then they burnt his body.
Who did?
I think the Russians did.
Oh, okay.
Right? So it's like, and then it's, you know, no, I don't know. And for some reason, I feel like you might not be able to sometimes trust Russia. But I feel the sort of the same way about the United States. So anyways, that conspiracy has always been kind of interesting to me, because it's like, well, they didn't really get a body, because look what the Russians did with Stalin. Like, you can still see that man's face today. I think if you go to a certain place where his body is, they just kept it. Like, I don't know, they preserved it. And with Hitler, they're like, burn his face. That's I felt that way when the United States were like, we caught the world's most famous terrorist. Now let's have no witnesses and then dump his body at sea.
Like, what the fuck? How come they didn't like take a page out of his book and take a picture of his body with that day's paper? You know,
you know, something, you know, like the peace sign, like, you know, they do in Korea or whatever. Like, I don't know, just something. I think that what they should have done, like, honestly, I do think this. I think they should have put him on that boat, that Navy boat. Preserve it in the freezer, whatever the fuck you do with bodies, or whatever, and then take it to like a neutral country where people from, where is he from? Yemen and Saudi Arabia and his family and like a United States representative, like just have like eight people go, yeah, that's him. And then give the body to the family and let them do their fucking thing. But I guess no witness burial at sea is just as good. I just never understood that. Well, I really never did.
It just, it's unprovable. Like, there's no going back. There's no, that's done now.
Like, shout outs to Jen Waddell. No, it wasn't Stalin, James, you stupid idiot. This is really what she typed for everyone on Apple and Spotify. This is what my friend Jen wrote. Not Stalin, James, you stupid idiot. Lenin, Stalin, they dragged through the streets by his testicles. I didn't know that. I had no idea. Jen's always educating me. She's a little harsh for all those people listening and not watching, but you know,
worth it.
Happens. She's also coming on the show tonight if she doesn't renege. And we'll also be visited by Paul Atkinson. Paul Atkinson is the man with the very deep voice, who's also known as the guy in the blue jacket. Blue jacket guy? Is that what he was called in during the Ottawa protest? Do you remember him, Paul? And he just like lost it on people.
I don't remember.
Well, he's been a podcaster on this network for now, like, it's got to be over a year now, I think. So, like, or at least since just after the protest. Like, he was all over the news, like, internationally. Like, millions of people saw this guy basically, like, tear the assholes off of, like people that were honking their horns and shit. I'm laughing because I can still picture it. But for Paul, it was a quite traumatic experience. Like for a lot of people in that downtown core where all the trucks were.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like being trapped in like those World Cup horns, just being inside of it.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
I don't know what I would do.
Well, yeah, I think, you know what? I didn't really pay. It's going to sound so bad, but I think so much. It got to so much bad, and I just stopped looking at, like, I stopped reading the New York Times for a little while. I stopped looking at.
Oh, did you? Oh, how tragic. Oh, my goodness.
Whatever
did you read?
Yeah. Sorry. Well, it's the only newspaper that I read because I can only afford one one subscription, so I just get that one.
You're the most frugal guy ever. Like, you can afford more than one subscription. I know. I'm pretty sure that's.
I like. You know. Yeah, you know, maybe.
All your money's tied up in dummies from Buenos Aires. Imagine you cracked it open and there was like $1 million bill in there or something, or some sort of like, you never know.
Yeah, but it would be funnier if I cracked it open.
And there were drugs?
Like, and I died the next day somehow. Like, I found all this money and then it was like.
Like that Brady Bunch episode where they went to Hawaii and found that voodoo doll or whatever that was. Do you remember that?
I never watched the Brady Bunch.
Come on. You never watched the Brady Bunch?
No, not really. Like, I know what it is. I know the intro more than anything. But I didn't really pay attention to it. I was...
I always thought that... And I'm not kidding. I'm not just trying to be funny. I used to think that the dad was always cheating. I just did. The dad was out of town, and the wife was like so obedient. It felt like she didn't know what was going on, you know. And she had like Alice, who was stealing shit, probably, and you know the kids, like six kids, with no railing on the fucking staircase. It was just these steps. There was like a railing on one side. If I'm recalling correctly, this could be a Mandela syndrome thing, but like I seem to recall that these stairs were like these modernish looking stairs that didn't like have a railing on the one side. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Someone look up the Brady Bunch staircase, please. and let me know.
Now I'm thinking I haven't seen the railing on that staircase either.
See, maybe, I think I was telling someone the other day, modern. I think the Mandela effect is like one of the greatest internet hoaxes of all time.
Oh, really? Because
I might be defining it correctly, but how I define it is like the Berenstain Bears, for example, which are, I've always been spelled that way. And I remember it being spelled that way when I was a kid, the Berenstain Bears or whatever, because I remember just not being able to unsee the word stain.
Yeah.
That's the way my mind works. But it is subtle enough to qualify as a possible Mandela effect candidate. And that's the formula for the Mandela effect. It isn't real. It isn't like I'm remembering wrong and somehow it magically changed one day and tricked all of us. Like, that's
well, apparently that's what happened with the fucking stairs, because somebody at Linda said that they had railings. Was it at least glass? No, it was probably wrought iron. Like, it's the 70s.
Send me a link to the picture, someone. Did they do it? Send the Google image link so I can take a look at it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Linda, where do you win?
I don't know. Do you like birds, Linda? I can send you a bird painting.
Dude. Linda, take him up on that. Linda, if you comment deal, then we saw an official deal. That's like the cocktail napkin of podcast contracts.
They had really open risers, but they did have railings. But the railing, Linda, it was like wrought iron, right? Like metal.
Was it hard to see? I wonder if it was hard to see. I wonder why no one sent the Google image link yet. Like, that's really what someone... Because everyone says I type too hard. James, you fucking type hard.
I'll take a bird. Okay, what do you know about birds, Linda? You got to just tell me what species do you really like. And...
Oh, I see.
I don't remember if it's my... Okay. But I got to say that if I have to paint it from scratch, you're going to have to wait because I'm in a sling for like another 4 weeks. But I will send it to you.
Wait, are you going to send her a new one? Oh, you're going to like actually make her a custom thing?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to...
Why would you agree to that? Just kidding.
I'm going to have her look at... Because I like painting birds. I'm going to have her look at the one, maybe some of the ones I've done on my Instagram. And then if there's one there that she likes, I would... Oh, you like nuthatches and woodpeckers. Okay. All right. Let's...
This is the reason, by the way.
How old are you now? Oh. There it is.
You can see why I thought that, though. Like, it's pretty, like a lot, you know.
That is not what I remember that house looking like.
Isn't that a dope-ass house? Seriously. Like, yeah, like really once you get rid of that, like, you got to get rid of that fucking weird filing cabinet with the horse on it. Like, you know, you put something else there. But, like, and that painting being clashing with with the railing that I didn't think existed is kind of weird. But
it's an odd place to hang a painting right behind a piece of wood.
See, I wouldn't have railings. Look how stupid the railings look, though.
Yeah.
I would just take them out.
I would at least only have the one on the outside. I wouldn't put one next to the wall.
But look how big and clunky it is. Like, I'd make it plexiglass or some shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I do like maybe... that little brick. Like, I like the idea of having a brick floor inside my house.
That looks like carpet, doesn't it?
Oh, is that carpet? Oh, okay.
I don't know what it is, but it probably is.
The idea of having a brick floor. You know, you got your own. Fucking slide your feet on it and you do the pumice work every morning.
My favorite part is the part above the front door that looks like the old CKVR kind of graphic-y, the orange, yellow, and blue like blocks there. Do you see it?
Yeah, that's if I was a better artist, I'd be able to tell you who that painter was that used to paint like that. Yeah, and they were always like really bold. They weren't colored like that, but they were like all the paintings were sections. Mm-hmm. If I asked my wife, she'd know for sure because
I don't think they're called colored sections. I think they call them sections of color now. Just
sections of color. Oh, okay. Anyways, but the colors that were used in those paintings were like red and white and blue and yellow, really bright colors. Like some shampoo company actually bought the rights to it once and covered all their packaging with it.
For some reason, I just thought of the guy that made the, remember the who's that famous art director guy that like created the MSN butterfly?
Oh, I forget that guy's name. Are you talking, was it Saul Bass or something?
Something
I don't know.
Like that. I always thought that, like, why does everyone think the butterflies look the greatest thing ever? Like, I used to be like, it's fine. I get it. Like, you know, like it stands out. It's different colors. Uses magenta, I think, even. Hey, great. Good job. But why was that considered to be, like, the Picasso of logos? Like, and it was, legitimately.
Which TV station are we talking about?
What was the
logo again? What was the brand?
MSN logo of the butterfly.
Oh, that little thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's good. There's no doubt. Like, it's really stood the test of time.
Yeah,
I see Jen called out the shampoo company that bought the artwork, L'Oreal. James, you have to figure out a way to tell Linda how to get a hold of me. Linda, go on Instagram and search up the Paul Riss and Mondrian. Thank you.
Here, I'll just send the link, Linda.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Well, yeah. Technology.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have, sure. Yeah. You literally do ads online.
Well, I do, I know.
If I just search Paul Riss, it should come up, no?
On
there you are.
Instagram, yeah.
The Paul Riss, that one?
Oh, she's looking at it right now. She's already got it. Okay. She's like 10 steps ahead of us.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, everybody. See, yeah. I know I shouldn't type. I just want to say that I just got that new t-shirt, and it's my new favorite t-shirt. So, I have production coming and it's going to be really dope, but until then I wanted it to be as like casual and homey as possible, even when I do interviews. So yeah. That's the documentary that I did. That's where you run shit. That's this guru from Gangstar. I did this tribute event when he died of cancer and I gave the money to cancer research. And then that is the world's most famous meth dealer artist depiction from Breaking Bad, Heisenberg. Yep. And I got this new shirt. I did a lot of clothes shopping in Ottawa because I haven't gone clothes shopping, and I'm not even kidding when I say this, in about, I don't know, 15 years, something like that. Like, I bought a t-shirt here and there, but yeah. Other than that, like, my ex would go to, like, you know, wherever, Value Village or Winners or someplace like that, and just come back with something. And to her credit, she was pretty good at picking shit out, but it was always clothes like that. And so, but I found, like, I went to Nordstrom's, and yeah. I was looking at prices, like, this is ridiculous. And then I looked up and it was like, everything is 70% off. And I'm like, which would put it on par with Winners.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
So I'm like, okay, let's do this. So I got like literally what would be the equivalent of like $3,000 worth of clothes and shoes for like, I don't know, $600 or something like that. Right. Like it was really cheap. And, there was a t-shirt place, or there was a in the mall. I went to the whatever it's called, the Rideau Center or something like that. I totally reinvigorated my hatred for shopping malls. It's just the worst ever. I can't stand them. Pretty horrible. You know, when people say I was literally shaking, you know, but we're always like, whatever. I was literally shaking. I was just like, get me the fuck out of here. And like people like, I don't know, like people asking me for directions, but in French. Was really kind of like, I don't even, like, I guess you ask for directions, parlez-vous, never, I don't know, what the fuck. And, but then I discovered this place on the way home in Canada called the Tangier Outlet. And it's all these brand names and the entire plaza is like half price brand names.
I think I've been there. I think I've been to that place because my family lives just outside of Ottawa.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, and I've heard my sister talk about the Tangier.
Yeah, it's so I ended up spending like a bunch more money, but like it was all really cheap. So I now have like this like new wardrobe for the first time ever. And I got to tell you, since the last time I had hair and got my last really good haircut, I've never felt better. It turns out wearing like, you know, new clothes. I know this is really unfamiliar territory for me. Tangier, according to private chat. Don't worry. I'll let you in a second, Paul. But now it's going to be a couple seconds longer. Paul just corrected my pronunciation. Not from the Paul, green
the
room.
Paul. The other Paul.
The other Paul. Wait. But
this Paul was also incorrect.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not materialistic at all. Everyone that knows me is like, James, if anything, you could become more materialistic. You don't, you know, whatever. And
you like things.
Yeah. And but it's true. I just like, I feel like new shoes, especially. I was wearing the same Blundstones for like 10 years and yeah. I wore them like every season. They were like my 5 days a week shoe.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to do that too. But like, I actually haven't, I've only wore a pair of jeans one time since the 2019, since the end of 2019. And really? The rest of it has just been like basically track pants or like these, my wife bought me these, Rachel bought me this pair of track. They're called, like, I would never work out in them. I never work out in them, but they're like really super comfortable, but they're not jeans. Yes. They're not like, I just haven't had to do it. And I'm so happy not to do it. The only reason I'm wearing a button-up shirt right now is because I got a sling on and I can't, it's literally impossible for me to wear a t-shirt right now.
What'd you do to yourself?
So Paul Atkinson from the Eager Beaver podcast is joining us. He was typing messages from the green room, and that's why he had to wait a little bit longer. How are you, Paul?
All good. I'm good. I'm great, brother. I just got back home. We were at a VIP event earlier for the Ottawa Race Weekend is taking place, so it's a big marathon, and I hung out with some really cool racing, running people. I have no idea their names. Had a nice conversation with a few of them, so you know. Good times, you know.
So you were like a very important Paul.
Sure. I'll take it.
It's a VIP event. You could just say event. It's fine. We already know because you're wearing a cool blazer. You're at it.
Well, I fluffed. So it's funny. When I went to the pub after work today, I had a pink t-shirt on and I put on a different cap. And I get there and the guys are like, there's my lady friend. You look like a castaway from the member of from
Oh, there's your lady friend right there. Hello, lady friend.
You look like kind of a castaway or a cast member of Duck Dynasty. And I'm like, what? Huh? Yeah. And then I looked in the mirror and I had the right ball cap on and I went, oh shit, I do look like a cat. Oh my god, I'm a Duck Dynasty guy. Thankfully, next week the beard gets shorn, removed, done forever over the next few days so that we can raise some money for a really good cause. Cornerstone Housing for Women, and every day it's like a different style that I'll shave it, and that money, we're going to have people bid on it and just send the money directly to the charity. So
nice.
It's well, you know, It's literally the least amount of effort I can put into raising money. I grow a beard and I shave it off and people spend money for me to look like a fool for 5 days. And the thing is like, I'm going to have a giant Salvador Dali, crazy ass long mustache for 5 days for $500. If we can get somebody to spend that much money or a group of people, I don't care. Just as long as we can raise $500 for me to wear a Salvador Dali for a week, I'm happy to do it.
That's awesome. I did a thing once. This advertising agency I used to work at, they had a sort of an evening for Ronald McDonald House funding. And so every person that worked at the agency had to come up with something to like auction off, right, for charity. And, you know, some people did a painting, some people wrote a song that they sang, and you know, various things that people did because you know, working in a creative place. And my thing was, I was whoever paid the most money, because I was trying to get people to argue over it. Mm-hmm. Whoever would pay the most money, I would tattoo their name on my body in a heart, like you know, the classic with a piece of paper wrapped around the heart. And I don't remember exactly how much. This was so long ago, I don't remember how much we got, but these two guys kept bidding against each other. And then my wife pulled them aside and said, "You guys are so dumb. Why do you keep outbidding each other? Why don't you just take all of your budget and pool it together and make them put both the names on there?" So now I have
a genius.
Yes, she really is. James would agree with that. And now I have Rob plus, oh God, why can't I fucking can't remember his name all the time? Well, I got all fucking stressed out about it. And so I got the two guys' names tattooed on my arm.
That's great. So years ago, I was working with a fella, and I worked construction for 29 years, but I build networks and fiber optic stuff and, you know, telecom stuff. Yep. There's this one fella, he's like, we're on a job site for about 6 weeks together, and he goes, bro, I really love working with you. I'm like, yeah, I really enjoy your company too. You're like a great coworker. I don't have to tell you anything. You don't have to tell me anything. We're just look at one another and we get it symbiotic. We communicate and blah, blah, blah. It's great. He goes, I got to tell you how much I love you. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, well, I guess he's gay. Sure. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. Told me he had a wife though. So maybe this is new to him and new to her, but whatever. So he's like, yeah, so I love you this much, bro. I got your name tattooed on my body. I'm like, what?
As a surprise?
He goes, no, check it out, bro. I got your name tattooed on my butt cheek. And he literally turns around, drops trow, and it says, your name. And he got tattooed literally your name. And I'm like, I laughed so hard, I thought I was going to throw up. I'm like, dude, that is fucking brilliant.
That's a long way to go for that joke. Like,
well, yeah. Like, and he goes, I've pulled that joke on like about a dozen people. I'm like, dude, you can do that for the rest of your life.
Yes.
It's brilliant.
And maybe he likes showing his ass to people. So he also got that.
Well, it was just one cheek, not the whole ass, just one cheek. Oh, okay. So like if you show the whole ass, I think there's some sort of violation of, I don't know, whatever. But if it's one cheek, it's like, it's just a little bit of flesh. It's just a bit of flesh with a tattoo on it that says your name.
That's amazing.
Is this your penis again?
No, wasn't talking about my penis.
Okay, I was just saying, it's a tattooed your name on it. I don't know, I thought it'd be pretty good.
So is your wife's name Wendy too? No, it says welcome to Ottawa. Have a nice day. What are you talking about?
Sorry, I had to stir the sauce again. That's what happened. Which is something I do even when I'm on the podcast. But guys, by the way, I make a pretty dope ass sauce. I think I've been wanting to bottle sauces for like ever, and I think I might do it this time. I might do it this year. I'm going to grow my own tomatoes. I'm just going to fucking do it. I don't care.
Well, bro, I would love to try your sauce. It's a bummer we couldn't connect this week. You were in town and, you know.
Yeah. I didn't want to do it for like 20 minutes because I literally only had 20 minutes when I was like, I had 45. But by the time we got together, it would have been like 20 minutes. So it seemed to rush. And then the next day, you just didn't call me. And I just felt awkward calling you again. So.
No, the next day I was busy as fuck, and the day after that I worked 12 hours straight, so.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Ottawa was okay. There was a weird situation. A blonde chick was, I went to, actually, I met her first in front of my building. She was like crying. Oh. And she was near her bike, and I thought she had dropped her phone in her wallet and stuff. So I was just walking, it was like 9 o'clock or something, and I just stopped, and I didn't grab because it was her wallet and her phone. I didn't want to like grab it because I didn't know she had dropped it or what she was doing. But I was like, "Are you okay?" And she was crying and she just started like going into this thing about how she's like, "I'm a server and I went to 70 interviews in the last 2 months and no one's hired me and everything like that." And she was just so distraught. And I was just like, "Oh,
damn."
So I was like, "Well, do you have a friend that you can call? Like, you seem pretty distraught." Like, I didn't know what to do. And I wasn't certainly going to, like, you know, ingratiate myself and like, "Hey, maybe I should take you for a coffee," because that's just whatever. So I stayed with her for like 10 minutes. And then she was like, "I'm meeting my friends at this bar. Like, you should come." And I was like, "Okay, maybe." So I went upstairs and with all the intention of not going at all. And I was just like, fuck, I'm not sleepy. So I went to this place called Poor Boys.
Poor Boys. Yeah, I know where it is.
This little hole in the ground, but it's actually kind of neat. It's funky. And I went in.
Cheap beer. The food's pretty good.
Well, yes. Let me tell you how cheap the beer was. By the time I got there, the blubbering woman was completely trashed. Like, she was like trash. And she kept on. So her boyfriend worked in the kitchen, I found out, like halfway through the night. And I wasn't, again, now she's drunk, blubbering girl. So I'm like, I find drunk people annoying. Like, not now that I don't drink, I find
I get it.
Being around drunk people is like being around children. Mm. You know, like
it's worse than that.
Yeah, it is worse. It's awful. So she's that, and she's like sitting at the table. So they're sitting sort of at the bar, and I'm sitting at one of the small tables in this establishment. Mm. And they sort of they have turns. So it's like I'm on a table there at the bar, and she sits at the table with me, and she keeps on showing me the world's shittiest tattoo of a red heart that's not even filled in, but it's like on her, like it's like this far away from her Versace.
Oh,
right.
My
and
goodness.
So, and she keeps on showing it and says, "Did you see my tattoo?" And she reminded me of my stepmother, if you really want to know the truth, right? Like,
oh, dude.
What? Ask Paul.
I do know her.
Yes, that's right. Tell me
that's
that.
That's all kinds of levels of bad.
Well, actually, the problem with that analogy is that my stepmother was so much worse than that. You know, it's not
Jesus.
So much worse. Paul, can I get a witness?
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah. It just makes, I don't know.
That's right.
I had never met someone like her.
Yeah. There you go.
That point in my life, and I live in East Hamilton. I still haven't met anybody like her.
She wouldn't class the place. She wouldn't class the place up if she moved to East Hamilton. Let me tell you. That.
Oh.
Dude, that says a lot.
It does. What? That's about all we're going to say about it too. So she's showing me this tattoo over and over again. And I turn to her friend, and her friend's like, so I don't know how old this girl was. You know, she could anywhere between 28 and 50, right? Like, I have no idea. And cause I can't tell ages, I've realized. And said the girl at the bar, she has all this ink, and I think she's like 32, which turns out to be 26. And I'm just like, listen, I just want to let you know that, and I hope everyone is aware that I'm just a dude sitting here. I'm just like, because I know her boyfriend's in there, and I don't know why she keeps showing me her tattoo. But like, I'm not interested. Like, nothing's gonna happen or whatever. And they're like, oh, she does this all the time. You have no idea, right? Like,
she's
and I'm like, really? She's like, yeah. She's like, she shows that tattoo to like 2-3 guys a night once she has more than 2 beers. And I'm like, okay.
Good to know.
Her boyfriend comes up to me like 10 minutes later, I'm really sorry that my wife keeps showing you her tattoo. I'm like, this is amazing. This is the greatest. So I stayed.
That's awesome.
I had one Corona and a coffee because I'm that guy now. And then I left. But and then the walk home was weird. It's a weird. I don't know. That night was weird. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
You're on Somerset Street, and there's a lot of weirdness on that street. So from Poor Boy back to your hotel, and I know where you're staying, you're passing by all the weirdness, all the grunge, all the strangeness, all the strange that is Ottawa. Like, literally. And there's more of it, of course.
I had a few times on the way back. On the way back to the hotel, there was people walking by, and one guy was on shrooms.
Oh yeah,
this woman is like helping him. She's like, hey handsome, sorry about my boyfriend. He's on shrooms. Do you know anything about shrooms? And I'm like, I know a little bit about shrooms. Yeah. Like, do you have any more shrooms? The first thing I'd like to know is if you have any more shrooms, right? But no, I wouldn't have taken any. Actually, I didn't even say that. But I was just like, how much did he take? And she's like, I don't know. How much did you take? And he said like 3 grams. And I was just like, oh. Mm. All right. Well,
is that a lot? I don't know.
To me, it's not. And but I have a different approach to mushrooms. I don't have a tolerance for mushrooms. I have an appreciation for stronger and stronger feelings when on mushrooms, right? Like, it's not like when I'm on 6 grams, I feel like you would on 2, or it could, but because I approach it in a different way. So I do what's called the hero dose. I don't do anything. It's not called that because it's branding. It's called that because it actually has a definition, like a hero dose. So there's 3 levels, I guess you would say. There's like microdosing, right?
Mm.
There is your average shrooming, which is for most people like between 2 and 3 grams most of the time. Like if you're going to have a trip, right? Mm. Like 1 gram probably, well, it might do it for some people, but anyways. And then there's a hero dose, and a hero dose is anything more than 5.5 grams. Usually, like for the last 2 years, I've never taken less than 6, and I've taken never more than 10. I got to tell you, 10 is pretty crazy. But
that all sounds like a lot.
It all of it sounds way too much.
But it's hard to explain because it actually it's an approach. It is a process. The way that you do it, the fact that like if you go into like I wouldn't recommend you do that if you're not a person who approaches it like I do. And the way that I approach it is that the potency to me is falling deeper and deeper into heaven. Like it's not falling deeper and deeper into paranoia or deeper and deeper into nervousness or anxiety or anything like that.
Do you fall into heaven or rise up to heaven? Like I'm just curious.
You become enveloped in heaven.
Well, it comes for you.
Fair enough.
Like,
I think that's
like the more cartoony my surroundings look, the happier I am, the more gleeful I become. You know, like it's not something that I'm like afraid of because I always know what it is.
So it's like the episode of The Simpsons where Homer
find your soulmate, Homer
spices.
Yeah. And Homer wasn't all freaked out.
No.
He woke up on a golf green, but
he talked to Johnny Cash, who was a fox for a little bit.
Yes.
A coyote. Sorry. A coyote. Yeah.
Find your
Johnny Cash is a coyote. Yeah.
Pretty great. So
great. Yeah.
I must have been Conan O'Brien must have been the head writer in that. He must have been writing for them. That era was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It might have been Michael Price, the guy that I had on. Hold on. What's that one called? Homer Pepper episode.
I don't remember.
Writer. Written by John Keeler.
Yeah.
Okay, so it wasn't the guy. But my guy wrote the Michael Price wrote the Simpsons movie.
So he wrote the penis joke.
Which one? Oh, yeah.
The very beginning. Yeah. It's like perfect. That was a perfectly constructed joke. Because you were just like, oh, I see what they're doing here. I don't think I'm. And then you're like, they can't show it. They can't. And there it was. It's so well
acted. Is it because he's a cartoon? Is that why?
No, it's because he's a fucking child.
Yeah.
It's like, it's weird.
No, but what I mean is that, like, the way that they were allowed to show it, is that because it was a cartoon?
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'm sure. There's a certain age where they probably can show your penis, and then you get to a certain age where it's not cool for a while, and then it comes back around again. Once nobody wants to look at it, that's when they'll put it on camera.
Hi, I'm 35 and it's wrinkly and there's no foreskin. Oh, we don't want to see that. We don't want to see that.
It's just because pedophiles exist, right? That's really the reason. Because the rest of us saw that scene and we're like, haha. You know? Like we're so weird about the human body, I think. Like I'm not, you know, advocating Hustler B like on cereal boxes and shit like that, but like, you know, we're kind of puritanical in weird ways. You know,
well, yes, we are, but when it comes to children, I think we should protect them at all costs.
Oh, for sure. For children, obviously. But I'm just saying, like let's pivot away from children because clearly, you know. But but the idea, like you remember when I found out that the UK had, like, sunshine girls, basically, that were topless, I was clutching my pearls. I was, like, 10 probably. And I was like, what? Like, how can that be? And now it feels silly. You know, plus we have
Samantha Fox. That's how she came Nick fame was because she was a page three girl in the sun.
Oh, she was so hot. I love Samantha. Yeah. Samantha Fox and Mitsu. Mm-mm-mm. Remember Mitsu?
Touch me. Touch me now. Mitsu. Bye bye. Mo cowboy.
She did not sound like that at all, Paul.
No, but it does sound great when you say it, though, Paul.
Yeah,
thank you. I don't know how else to do it. It's like I can hit I notes.
Hold on a second. Let me just get my little speaker and put it under my prostate while Paul talks. Hold on.
Bye bye, Mo Cowboy. No, that's not the right key. I don't know.
It's not gonna work. That'll just stay. What are you doing? Are you eating your sauce right now?
No, I'm eating ice cream.
Ice cream. Oh,
ice cream. Yeah, I forgot you were eating ice cream.
Yeah.
Did you forget you're Italian? You should be eating gelato. You should eat a gelato because you're Italian.
Actually, I avoided gelato for like so long because I thought it was fruitcake ice cream.
Bro, like I can't eat ice cream because I have, you know, I'm allergic to dairy, but I can eat gelato and I can't eat a lot of it, but I could have gelato from time to time. And it's
you can't have a lotto?
Exactly. I can't have a lotto of gelato, but I can have some gelato. and it's very tasty, and it doesn't, you know, tear me up inside. No, whereas ice cream just do.
I didn't. So the accurate story is I didn't know until like 2003. Gelato was just Italian ice cream. I literally thought it was ice cream that had bits of fruit in it.
Much better than that.
Do you know how many times I've heard something similar to that from Italian? Like literally, yo, I'm Italian. You eat gelato?
I don't need that shit.
Now, and you don't do it, but what I'm saying is, like a lot of guys I grew up with be like, yo, I'm Italian. I'm like, oh, let's go for gelato. I don't eat that shit. I don't know what that is. I'm like,
I don't eat olives.
What? I don't eat olives. They're disgusting. Fuck that. That's nasty.
And there she is again, the girl in Paul's house. Sorry.
And I'm keep looking around. I'm like, there's no way that Rachel's behind me. I'm up against the wall.
No, that's not Rachel. That's Pedro.
Yes. Pedro is there. And there's a lady riding a tiger on a mini surfboard up there.
Are you the tiger?
I like that.
I am not the tiger.
Is that a representation of you? Is that how you work with
Rachel? That's my lady. You know, it's okay though, James. Like, I think like learning something like that later in life is, I think that's kind of interesting.
I didn't know sun-dried tomatoes existed until I was 20.
That's
well, and who doesn't love sun-dried tomatoes? Aren't they like they're awesome, right? But I don't know how old I was when I discovered them, and I went, oh my god, these are spectacular.
How did they turn this into candy?
Right. I could eat a bag of them.
I'm a very picky sun-dried tomatoes guy. Like Paul, you actually probably remember this because I think I gave you your first delicious sun-dried tomato ones. Probably. And they're from the St. Lawrence Market in the basement. The ones that were all ground floor. And they were the ones that were like you got with the tongs, and they had like peppercorn and like herbs and lots of oil and shit. And they were tender, and they didn't have any raisiny kind of flavor to it whatsoever. Like that shit you get in the jars is like chewing gum. Like it's like, you know, it's no good. You got to get the tender ones, the ones that you could literally just go and tear it apart like it was nothing.
Oh yeah,
those are delicious.
So I'm gonna tell you something that I just learned yesterday that I didn't know. But like for 53 years, I didn't know. 52 and a half, I guess. So giraffe, like giraffe, do you say giraffes when you pluralize it? Anyway, giraffes, they are pollinators. They're fucking pollinators.
Like bees?
Yeah, right? So
shit falls out of their mouth, right?
No, it's so much crazy. So much, like, it makes so much sense when I tell you this.
Nostrils.
So what it is, you know, they have the long neck, obviously, so they can reach the best, newest, tenderest leaves and flowers on top of trees. So that's how they get such great nutrition, is eating those things. But because they put their face into the tree just gets pollen all over their face, and they eat a bunch, and then they move to another tree, and that pollen gets left there, and then they take some. It's like, but I was pretty high last night when I was watching a nature show, like, and I thought to myself, I need to find a time to say this to somebody and find out if everybody knew this or just me that was amazed that like.
I thought only insects could do shit like that. I had no idea.
The hell of a hummingbird.
I've seen giraffes in the wild in Africa, like in Botswana and in Zimbabwe. And I just learned this. I did not know this before. It makes perfect sense, but so when I went on safari the first time, my mom and dad, who'd lived in Africa for a few years at this point, were like, oh, it's going to be amazing. You're going to see all these animals. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I've seen this shit at the zoo. And then you see them in their habitat.
I've seen them sleeping already.
Yeah. But you see them in their habitat where they're like, you're the visitor. And it's like, whoa, shit's really different. It hits different. You see giraffes and zebras and lions.
Excuse me. What? What did you
call giraffes and zebras?
Zebras?
Zebra.
Yeah, it's called a zebra.
All right. I'm sorry, I've never heard that. See, we're all learning new things. I thought it
was
a zebra.
Well, we don't have them, so we don't get to say what their name is, right?
I didn't know. I'm just saying, I didn't fucking know. Like, I'm happy to,
All the time you thought it was zebra.
Well, yeah, listen, it's like when I found out that a GIF is really a GIF. Does anyone call it a GIF? I don't know anyone that does.
So I've always
called
it a GIF.
Go on with the zebra story, Paul.
Well, so wait. So it's zebra like Deborah.
Yeah, I saw a GIF about it yesterday. I know. It's fine.
No. Zebra, Deborah. They rhyme. It's not Debra. It's Deborah, right?
Yeah, GIF. What if? They rhyme, right? Okay, go ahead.
GIF, finish your story. I guess. I don't know.
What's in that ice cream?
Peanut butter.
It's hitting fast, whatever it is.
I'm churning it so that it
gets. Okay, so listen, I want to get back. Gelato-ish. I want to hear Paul's story because he hadn't told us what the thing was yet.
So I was in visiting my folks in Botswana, and we went on a game drive in Chobe, which is the northern part of Botswana, which borders on Zambia and Zimbabwe. And we did this thing down the Zambezi River where the hippos chased us, which was cool as shit. Then we spent a day in Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe. And it was one of those things, like, my folks are like, you got to see Victoria Falls. And I'm like, well, you know, I've seen Niagara Falls. Like, how can it be? And then you see it and you're like, okay, whoa. So, yeah. It's like, well, I've seen zebras and I've seen zebras and I've seen giraffes and lions in the zoo. And, you know, that's not a big thing. And then you see them in their habitat and you go, whoa. And waterfalls. Yeah, sure, I've been to Niagara Falls. That's cool as shit. I loved it. It's awesome. But how important, how big is Victoria Falls? And then you see it and you're like, oh my dear goodness gracious me, this is something to experience. And it's one of those things where I've watched 8K video on an 8K monitor with the work I do of a flyover of Victoria Falls, and I'm like, as incredible as that is, and I've watched it in VR, and it's unbelievably incredible. I'm like, still doesn't even come close to being there.
Nope.
Doesn't even come close to being there. And you stand there and you feel the spray and you look at it and you're like, holy.
Pure ozone too, eh?
Oh, man. It's unbelievable.
And, well, have you been there, Paul?
I haven't actually been there, no. But I have been to Africa and I did do a little bit of a safari. And yeah, it's like, there's something about reality. There's a thing that you, I mean, I don't know whether it's the fact that no camera can do what your eyes can do. Like, do you notice how when you watch a movie and they show someone far away, and even if they do it snap, that's like the zoom, like you see somebody close up in focus, it's like your eye can do that so fast you can't see it happening. There's like, I don't know if it's like just the our ability to take in the reality on a level that that we're not able to reproduce except in when you're there.
I had a friend describe it once as saying it's life in ultra high definition. Your eyeball, your eye, if you're able to see, because not everybody can, but if you're able to see, it's life in ultra high definition. So when you experience something like Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe, it's just, it's breathtaking. It's life changing. It's life altering in ways that you have to experience it in real life to get it. And I realize that it's not cheap to do. Weirdly enough, though, if I decided I'd like to spend a week in traveling about northern Botswana and Zimbabwe, I could do it for less money than it would cost me to fly to Yellowknife for a week. Which is, you know, in Canada.
Yes.
That's a cool experience. I don't know if I've ever had like a moment where I've been somewhere where it was the beauty was, I was so awestruck that it was life changing like that. But I've always thought that, you know, places like, I don't know, I've always wanted to go like Fiji or Hawaii, you know, places like that, like and see and sort of get that, I guess, sort of Lake Louise or Banff or whatever has spots that are like that. I was the experience that I had when I was in BC in the Rockies was so traumatic for me that I like didn't have time to really soak it in. Like I had so many fucking like in a span of like 2 months. Okay. I felt, so we were going where they were cleaning rivers. So the loggers would go in, they would clear cut everything, and they would leave like, I don't know, 60, 70% of what they cut behind. And it would clog up the rivers that started from the snow caps, right? So some of these riverbeds were like 30 feet wide, and it was dry, right? Like, because it was like just like trickling amongst the brush. And so our job was to clear all that and recreate the river, essentially. So, but some of this stuff was cut like, I don't know, years and years before we got there to clear it, right? Like, let's just say it was like 7 years. I don't know how long it was, but enough time to grow like underbrush that was like 8 feet high at certain points, right? And we'd walk along fallen trees with like, and it's me, with like a big backpack with chainsaws and cork boots. And I didn't, like, you have to kind of know how to use cork boots to your advantage, or it will be a distinct disadvantage. They're basically cleats, right? Like, and you're walking along logs and shit. And a lot of these logs are wet. So anyways, I'm walking along a log one day, and I lose my balance, which isn't totally unheard of, but I did it a lot because I wasn't used to any of this shit, right? I was like a fish out of water. It was fun. And so when I could tell that I was losing my balance, you kind of sort of jump fall on purpose so that you can land on your feet. But I'm landing on all this brush and I just go, right? And I'm like now like, I don't know, tits deep or something or like whatever, at least navel deep in brush. So I put down my chainsaw, right? Which you're never supposed to do unless you put the fucking strap on a branch so it doesn't fall into the underbrush, right? And all that. And I go to climb out and I can't climb out. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I don't feel stuck. And then I look down and there's a branch. It's like, I don't know, as thick as the bottom part of a baseball bat, right? That had gone through my pant leg above my knee and came out my pant leg beside my button.
So
I was like clothespinned, but like...
You didn't get stabbed,
to
though.
To the one side, could have gone right in my prostate. It could have gone right in my butt. It could have, like, totally ruined my entire life forever. This much, right? And that was, like, day three.
You don't know if it would have ruined it because you haven't lived that experience, but definitely would have changed it.
That's right. That would have been a life-changing experience. You're absolutely correct, right?
For the better or worse, we don't know. But, you know, either way.
We'll never know.
I was hanging off a root once over the edge of what I thought was a cliff. So now I'm all like shell shocked. And this is because the first thing happened on like day three. So like day five or some shit, right? Like I'm hanging, like we were supposed to climb down and I'm like, what the fuck? And I was up there for like 20 minutes trying to plot my way down because it was such a, I didn't realize, I thought it was straight. But it was just angly enough where like a guy literally had to, this native guy, sorry, this indigenous person, I came up to the cliff and literally just like, you do it like this. And he fucking slid down to the bottom and he's just like sliding. Like and I'm like, what are you, a fucking like superhero? Like, that was crazy.
Well, yeah.
Like that's a stunt. Like, so then I just ended up doing it. But all I did was lie down. Like this. And I didn't try to like navigate it or whatever, and I still fell like head first into the river. Like I fucking like I landed and then like my momentum forward because of the weight that you have on. Oh fuck, I was,
you know, in his head he's going like, these dumb white people, stupid white people.
I was saying this dumb white guy, like I was like how, like it would be like me taking like if that's all they knew and then like me taking them to like Bloor and Lansdowne in like 1997.
You know, yeah, good luck.
Yeah,
see ya.
I'll
pick you up on Sunday.
Oh, it's bad. There was a time where in BC where I like so I was staying in this house when we weren't working, and I was by myself. It was like a bungalow, but it was like right in Bella Coola. And basically, I don't know what river it was.
I gotta go.
Okay, bye. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is when a girlfriend tells a boyfriend what to do. So, or a boyfriend preempts it.
He texted her saying, save me.
That's also a possibility. That's also a possibility. Well, you mean like, you know, I think that he made a bad choice to come on to begin with. Like, if you're on a date, he's still wearing his blazer. You know, she's walking back and forth, sort of dropping hints just by her presence, walking back and forth. Like, you can't, you know, should have read the room. But yeah, I was going to tell the story about how, like, so I was staying in this house and I walked to the riverbank, which was like kind of stupid in a way, I guess, in hindsight. It was like 50 feet from the back door of the house.
Yeah.
And I jumped off of this like little bank, like 4 feet or something like that, onto sort of like these rocky / sandy riverbed. It was a big river. And I see footprints, and they're small bear footprints. And then right beside them are big bear footprints.
Oh, and that's worst kind of bear footprints to find. Small ones next to the big ones.
Not a great pairing. It's not Chianti and provolone, ladies and gentlemen. This is a different thing altogether, right?
Yeah, it's and, a piece off kind of situation.
Yeah. And but I look to my right, and when I look to my right, the mother, like, I'd say like 50 feet away or something like that. So it wasn't really close, but I saw the mother's hind like disappear around the corner, and the baby bear like about to disappear and then stop and go like this. And I just ran. I just ran back. I don't even know if anything chased me. I was just like, the baby bear looked, and all I remember is thinking is like, mama bears kill things that look at baby bears, right? I just ran.
Yeah. If you look at it the wrong way. I had a bear experience this past summer, actually, at my camp in Northern Ontario. I had never seen a bear there. The guy across the street like hunts them, and he's like, oh yeah, there's tons of them. But I had never ever seen one. And then this thing showed up one night. I heard some banging around outside. So I went to the window and I look out the door, and it's like all four. It was a big black bear, like probably about 6 feet tall standing up. So it was really a big one.
Wow. And black bears don't usually get like, yeah, that's grizzly sized black bear.
It was really big. And it climbed up on my picnic table that I have outside of my cabin, and it ate all of my basil, and like ate all the herbs. Those just sat and just ate them, and I was just watching it like completely amazed. And then it went over to my red gas can that I just keep a little, it's like a tiny one, right, bit a fucking hole in it, and then just dropped it again, and all the gas ran out. So that thing's completely useless piece of plastic now. And then it went from there. It's like it was on the asshole tour. So ate my herbs, poked a hole in my gas tank, and then went across the yard to where I had this great big tractor tire inner tube that my kids play on in the river and in the lake. And he just was bouncing on it, like jumping up and down on it. Really? And he poked a fucking hole in it. It was big old claws.
Were you watching all of this?
Yes.
Why didn't you? Did you try to what were all the things you tried to scare it away, or did you just watch it?
I just watched it. I wasn't going to scare it away. I was interested to see it and just watch it do its thing. And I also didn't want to like draw attention to the fact that I was in my cabin, and like if it wanted to come inside, all it would do is go and then break open the windows, and plus that
habit that you have of slathering yourself in peanut butter, right?
Exactly. Well, there's a good chance I was probably high eating peanut butter on the end of a chocolate bar or something like that.
This isn't Manitoulin Island.
Yeah, this is Manitoulin Island. Yeah.
How long you your wife's family is from there, isn't she?
They moved there. They're actually from like north of Thunder Bay, but they moved to the island when Rachel was just about to go into high school. Okay. So she lived there for some of her teenage years, and then I think got the hell out as soon as possible. But then, as is often the case, you get drawn back to a place that you maybe didn't like. Because, like, you know, you move someone to a place like that. She went to school on a reserve, and then there was just no friend. Like, she didn't have friends, right? Like, she didn't know people there because they moved there just as she was going in. So it must have been.
That's her loss.
Yeah. No, well, she made friends because she charming as fuck. So she made lots of friends really quickly. And one of them we're really close friends with still today. And they live up on the island. So
what is it like? Like, I've always kind of wanted to know. It's so funny because I always sort of see people that I've met there, and I've known only a couple people that that were friends that were from there, or at least I think they were from there, or maybe they just lived there for a while. I don't know. But the culture there seems really interesting. There's a big deference towards the indigenous communities there, isn't there?
Yeah, well, like a lot of the island is reserve land, and it's where Wiquemecong is. And our friend married a woman that was born and raised in Wiquemecong, and that's the largest unceded territory that exists, I think, in Canada.
Really?
It's massive. That reserve is enormous. We got some friends who live there, some Aboriginal friends that live there, and so we spend a bit of time there. It's gorgeous. That island is really something special because it's big, and you know, you can live in a small town or you can live out in the country, or like we just live on a dirt road.
Yeah,
when we're there.
I live on a dirt road. It's nice, eh?
Yeah, I enjoy it quite a bit. I mean, I like the city where I live here in Hamilton, but I also really like the nothingness that's up there. You know, like I'll when I used to live in Toronto and go there, I remember how on my first day back, because I would go for all of July and August and we just lived there for the summer, and then my first fucking day at Union Station, in 7 minutes I saw more people by tenfold than I saw for the entire summer. It's like, I know. So crazy.
It's like Brooks, like how Brooks and Shawshank got institutionalized, but it's like the good version, you know? You're like naturized or something, right?
Yeah.
When I go back to Toronto, I feel like I'm in like a dystopian movie. Like the ads, when you go from like seeing the same, and I made this joke before, so don't send me email, but like when you go from seeing one rusty billboard a day for fucking years to then going and finding yourself for some stupid reason in Dundas Square and just doing a 360, it's just like, it's baffling.
Yeah.
It's baffling.
And that one billboard you've been looking at, it's been for a septic system, for a septic company forever, right? Or Pepsi.
It's like some VHS video shop that has been defunct for a decade, you know? Like it's, you know, there's actually where I live, there's this the billboard that I'm thinking of when I say that is something for the couples resort. And the couples resort billboard is like this faded, sunwashed, like limestone statue of like, I don't know, some Victorian something. No idea what it is.
What the hell's a couples resort? Like, is that some kind of a thing where you go for like mixing business up or what? Like, is it
sounds like a nightmare.
It doesn't sound like a good time.
Wow, let's go. Hey, honey, let's go somewhere else where there's a whole bunch of people that say, hey, honey.
yeah,
exactly.
Sometimes it can be fun. Sometimes I do like going to like a all-inclusive resort and just hanging out. That's a little different.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a good vacation with a girlfriend, ever. Like, or a really? Wife. Yeah, it's just like, I'm one of those, like, annoying people that when I go, like, except for Mexico, every time I've been to Latin America, I've gotten sick.
Oh, well, sometimes that happens.
I'm talking like bedridden for like four days in Costa Rica. Costa Rica, I'm pretty sure I got sulfur poisoning in Costa Rica because I spent like 3 hours in their hot springs.
I haven't had that experience. I did shoot a commercial in Mexico City once, and when I came home, I had something. I don't even know what you'd call it.
Now
that you mention it, when I start to think about it, I went to Panama a few years ago to see a harpy eagle and very, very many other birds. But
is that like a Don Henley's wife? A harpy eagle?
I don't know her personally, but she could be a harpy. And I came back with something. Again, the doctors at McMaster couldn't ever diagnose what I had. You know, it's like really weird when sometimes the doctor will just say, well, you know, sometimes there's bugs and shit. Sometimes you get a bug. They just,
that's
like
the doctor's way of saying, I have what? No fucking idea what you got yourself into, kid.
You know? I'll tell you what, though. One night, my fever was
cortisone cream. Yeah.
I couldn't wear my glasses because they would fog up from the heat coming off my face. That I was had such a bad fever.
Oh, wow.
That was awful. Nuts. Yeah, but yes, Jen, harpy eagles are awesome. And I actually found a monkey spine in the dirt at the base of the tree where the nest was. Because they're that big. They eat monkeys. Like,
Jesus.
I'd be willing to bet they've eaten.
They eat,
in history.
Are they like the big osprey versions? Is that what they are? Like, well, because there's the one kind that will knock goats off the sides of mountains.
Yeah, that's a different one. That's a different kind of eagle.
Yeah, it's an osprey of sorts, I think. I think they call it like, yeah.
This the width of my, like, that's how big a harpy eagle's leg is. It's as thick as my forearm.
Holy fuck.
That's how big the fucking thing is.
Like,
massive.
Talons like a wolverine, you know?
Oh, yeah. It looks like a, you know, like a, like a bunch of, well, you know, like Freddy Krueger. It's just got Freddy Krueger hands.
Or like the Lee Presson salon nails. I wonder if that. I've seen girls like that in South Beach, actually, with like talon fingernails. You ever seen that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
It's people like weird. Very difficult to do stuff. Like just regular. Like
boyfriend
regular.
Must be like, you're doing that on purpose.
I forgot that's what kind of show we were on.
oh, there is no definition of the show. And we usually
especially on casual Friday.
Yeah, 10:30 rolls around, I start to fade.
I'm going to be fading soon too.
Let's end it early then. There was other people early that might have came, but I don't think they're going to come at this point. So so we'll just like, you know, do a thing. But it was awesome seeing you again because yeah, I don't think I've seen you in the. I don't remember the last time I saw you in the flesh, dude. I really don't. I have no.
Really, really long. I wouldn't be able to put a date on that.
You were living that in your place near Ronce.
Yeah, like and, that Parkdale neighborhood there.
Yeah, it was probably like at least a decade ago.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. But I'm not gonna make any promises. I might never see you again, buddy.
That is very possible. I mean, we live pretty fucking far apart right now, and it's not like I'm heading. I try not to get on the other side of Toronto because then you have to go past Toronto, and I don't like doing that.
The general idea of point A to point B is that you pass the shit in the middle.
Yeah, I know, but when that's the thing in the middle, it's not.
Oh, I know. I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah. Because you can't go. The only way to go around it is if you head up like where like Sauble Beach and stuff like that is.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I could. I suppose if you pick like a Tuesday at, I don't know, you know, like
3 a.m.
11:20. No, no. I sleep at night now. I'm too old. I sleep at night. Yeah. At 11:20 in the morning or something, you know, and I could spend the $100 it takes to get from one end of the 407 to the other by 35. You must be. You're in. Where are you, in Haliburton or something like that?
No, I'm up like 40, like a half an hour east of the eastern gates of Algonquin.
Oh, okay. Wow, I didn't know you were that far.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty far. Wow. I'm like 4 hours away from Toronto, roughly.
Yeah. So, me too, if I go at rush hour.
Yeah, like you know, like there's Petawawa, Pembroke, and Renfrew. They're all 45 minutes away from Killaloe. Killaloe's like kind of in the middle of all that. So, and Bancroft is another one that's about 45 minutes away. So,
Well, like, I get almost near you. Well, I get near Bancroft when I go visit my parents because I do take that 407 out to 35 and up to 7 and across to Ottawa.
Okay. Well, listen, maybe one day, you know what? Maybe Toronto will be our meeting point one day. Cause I'm going to be spending more time there over the next year or so. So I'm going to we'll be in the neck of the woods. Either way, it was good seeing you tonight. Tell Rachel, I say hi and just give her a little smack on the butt for me.
I don't smack Rachel on the butt.
Really?
Well, sometimes.
Just pretend next time. Paul Riss, thank you very much for joining us, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was great.
We'll talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. My ex-brother-in-law, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Riss. He's dope. I like having him on. It's yeah, I haven't seen a lot of my friends for a lot of years. It's kind of something I should probably remedy now. But either way, that was a good show. sorry to Paul that he got called away by his girlfriend. You know, that's the price of ingratiating yourself towards women. I'm just kidding. That's a joke, everybody. We have Max Bernier on the June 6th, I just realized. And I don't want to bookend the show with abortion, but maybe... No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to talk about that again. I didn't say anything wrong, but I'm not going to talk about that again. But Max Bernier will be on. I have, on the 31st, I have Linwood Barkley. He just released another book that is a bestseller. Dude has sold like 20 million books or something like that. He's probably Canada's, right now, I would say he's like top three for Canada's most successful writers, like our exports or whatever. Linwood Barkley would just definitely be one of them, mystery writer. Check him out if you haven't. If you're a fan, you've read all of his shit because he's dope. And yeah, we'll have some people in between. Plymouth Brethren stuff. David Wallace is going to be launching his show called The Fix soon. Really busy time at Crier. I'm going to be traveling again in a little while. I'm going to go to Chicago. I'm going to interview the CEO of Harley-Davidson because they're having an anniversary event next month. So there's lots of stuff. There's lots of things happening. This is where Crier is about to show you what all this work and all these, like, you know, cryptic announcements that we were making over the last year. A lot of this stuff is happening right now. So this is a good time to be listening, and I appreciate that you do, and we'll see you next time on Black Bolt. Black Bolt. Black Bolt. Black Bolt. Black Bolt. Black Bolt.
Everywhere the imagination dares. It's for the open-minded, the pleasure seeker. It's Jeff Woods with the new podcast about relationships and sexuality, theme-based with special guests, the Blue Hotel Hotline, and every episode climaxes with an adult bedtime story. Get a room and listen in at the Blue Hotel. Begins Friday, September 23rd.
I'm Connie Thiessen, the host of Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast. We focus on Canada and the challenges facing Canadian radio and TV, as well as highlighting those moving the industry forward from podcasting and streaming to new broadcast tech. Check us out at broadcastdialogue.com or your favorite podcast app.